Perfect. The recording has begun. Thank you all for your patience. Welcome, welcome one and all to LHON Live. It is May 3rd. So if you all are getting ready, getting your cosplays ready for Star Wars Day tomorrow, you still have a day to go. And thank you for being here for LHON Live. For those of you who don't know me, my name's Andy Marks, joined here by Jessica. You there?
Hi, everyone.
I didn't hear many new voices, but I'll go ahead and give you all the spiel you normally get. Maybe I'll try and do it a little shorter, but Jessica and I met each other. Wow. We're coming up on 10 years ago, but back in June of 2014, when both of us were newly affected, at least in terms of not many years under our belt as being affected by LHON. And at that point in time, we were both at the first LHON conference for both of us. It was the second overall, I believe. But it was early days of LHON conference, early days of having LHON for Jessica and I. And we immediately benefited from what a lot of people will talk about at those LHON conferences, all of the seminars, all of the Q&As, all of the story sharing. But one thing that we thought was especially impactful for both of us was all of those conversations you get to have with people who share a very unique perspective on their life and very different than a lot of the people that they see and interact with throughout the day, but also very similar between all of us, whether we see each other and talk to each other or just meeting for the first time. So much of our lives are shared with common experiences. So we thought that it'd be really fun and interesting if we were able to kind of spread that benefit of the LHON conferences throughout the year by having conference calls and not requiring us to kind of be in person. Although the conference allows for a multiple in terms of the benefit that you have or that you experience on these calls, the conference really dwarfs that and puts into perspective all of the great experiences that we get to share together. But we thought, let's go ahead and tap into that as much as we can through conference calls once a month. And we began these calls back in August of 2014, and we've been doing them with varied formats every month since then. So these days, what we do is we get together, and rather than bringing topics from the Facebook group, we really want to ensure that everything we talk about here is beneficial and catered to the folks we have on the call every day. So we have approaching 20 people on the call today. I really want you all to feel welcome and encouraged to bring up any topics, questions, stories, or anything that this group could benefit from hearing, or you could benefit from tapping into this group to learn from. We really don't have many rules at all. In fact, if you bring up areas of concern that we think maybe aren't ideal for this forum, worst case scenario, we'll direct you elsewhere toward a professional, whether that be medical advice or employment or legal advice, areas that we may not be perfect at, or at least perfect advisors for you. But otherwise, we're happy to help you find the perfect Instant Pot or magnifier or whatever it is we can help you do. Talk about jobs, talk about seasons changing and wrapping presents. Everything is fair game here. I know we have a few topics we already got ahead of time, but before we get there, Jess, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing well. I feel like that spiel was very different than I normally ever do, but it was.
I know.
It was
good. I love how you changed it up. It was great. Yeah, it was fantastic. As always,
I'm doing well. Next month, I'm going to go ahead and say it here right now. You are going to do the spiel because you've heard it enough times.
Oh, I don't know about that. Whenever I do it, I just like make stuff up as I go along. So yeah,
that's what I do too. No worries. I'm doing well though. I'm in Hoboken, New Jersey, with a view of the Empire State Building out my window for those who can see. And I am enjoying things here right now. I know I shared with you recently, I've got some vacation headed my way in the next few weeks, which I'm both looking forward to and nervous about giving up my weekends because in my 30s, I've learned to really enjoy not doing nothing. Being productive with my weekends, but being productive in a way that it prepares me for my week, not being a wanderlust person on my weekends sometimes. But it's exciting. I'm sitting here on the couch with Chef, our dog, and excited to be here with you all tonight. How are you? How are things in Denver, if you are there?
That sounds lovely. Yes, I'm here in Denver. It is finally getting super sunny and warm weather. I think we have 70 degrees. So we're just not, I have not put away my winter gear, as I probably will prepare for one more snowstorm. But beyond that, then I'm starting to get the shorts out and get all excited for that. And so yeah, just kind of, running low mileage these days after Boston. So, like a quick 6 miles. So kind of keeping it easy these days. So it's pretty lovely.
How many miles have you run in the past 7 days?
Oh, 7 days. 12. That's it.
Wow.
That's like a typical, one day. I know. It's so fun.
I know it is, but that's pretty nuts to me. I feel like you would be, I'm curious if there are any, and when chime in if you want, but I'm curious if there are multiple people on this call who have run more than 12 miles in the past 7 days. I have not. I will let you know that. I don't know a week that I've run more than 12 miles in my life. So I'll let you know when it happens.
That's how I channel my crazy,
That's fair.
Everyone's got a thing. Yeah.
I am getting into Pilates these days. And by getting into, I mean, researching Pilates studios to actually take classes at. That's the stage I'm at.
That's exciting.
There are two Pilates studios I could get to without one Pilates studio I can get to without crossing any streets. And one is literally catty corner to me. Both of them are they can't be more than 50 steps from my front door. So I've narrowed it down to one of those two because they're good enough. And they're also as close as the downstairs, basically. So yeah, life is good.
Perfect.
Which makes me very happy. Well, we talked a little bit about topics. I'll bring up a couple of things here. I know one thing, I don't know if you'd like to give us the background on it or if you want me to cover it, but we're happy to talk about how to deal with sensitive conversations when people inadvertently and non-maliciously recognize, or rather don't recognize, their own privilege in some of the verbiage that they use around us. Do you want to give background or you want me to?
You said it so well. You might as well keep going because you're doing fantastic. This is why This is why you're a really good co-host, by the way. Like, note to everybody, make sure you have a good co-host, because he said it much better than I did.
We got a question from one of our listeners. That makes me sound so pretentious, by the way. we got a request or a question from a frequent caller on exactly what I was characterizing there. How to appropriately respond and or address situations where maybe a friend, a colleague, maybe just someone in your presence says something and even maybe complains about their situation without recognizing a degree of privilege that they may have over you. So I'll get more specific here. This can obviously be ableist in some ways, and we'll talk about that, but it can extend beyond ableism and be around racism or sexism or ageism. All of these are fair in terms of recognizing things that someone may inadvertently say without recognizing that. And we were asked, how do we like to respond? Is there a good way to respond without being overly bitter, but still highlighting this situation and this juxtaposition that they've put ourselves in? If you know you're going to be speaking, happy for you to say whatever you need to, but just want to let folks to know that I have not muted everyone for now.
Someone just joined the group and may not realize there was some background noise. So that person who just joined might want to mute. Yep, they did. We're all set.
No worries. All good. But the situation that was sent to us is someone who, let's pretend you are at work or hanging out with friends over lunch and gas prices have been soaring and they want to discuss how expensive it is to drive these days, or how maybe their car's in the shop and they're having to go a whole weekend without having their car, and how difficult it is, how much it sucks, and really complain about that in the presence of someone who, in my case, hasn't had a valid driver's license in over a decade or approaching a decade, and I don't get the privilege of driving. I've been in this situation myself. I've heard it from folks on this call. I've even read blogs from other blind folks who recognize the privilege that they themselves have, maybe financially, and they make decisions to spend exorbitant amounts on Ubers every month. I know I have friends who spend $1,000 a month on Uber because they had to give up their driver's license when they lost their vision. And yet people still feel it's okay to complain about how difficult and or expensive it is to drive a car when they still have the ability to do that. And we were asked, is there an appropriate thing to say to highlight that when someone is being maybe insensitive or not recognizing the privilege they have? Jess, before I share my own perspective, did I characterize that correctly? And how do you recommend, or how do you often respond in those instances?
First of all, spot on, and definitely said much more eloquently than I ever could. So I'll start there. You know, it's kind of tough. I think it's like a tough situation. I feel like it's really dependent on who you're in that conversation with, whether it's like a random person down the street, a kind of like a acquaintance, or like a super close friend. I think I struggle with this because I try to make positive light and like laugh most things off, whether that's like a good idea or bad, but that's kind of just like my like tactic of like, I don't know if it's like my nervous tactic or like my all around tactic, but I would probably make some sort of like my thing that I would do here is probably make some sarcastic, funny, light joke. Like not as much of a jab, but not as much as like a, like, I don't know. So I think probably like in the car situation, like, oh my gosh, you know how much it cost me to fill up my tank today? I was like, oh my God, I feel so bad for you. And I probably would say something like sassy, sarcastic like that, but it's probably within context with people kind of telling me that I know super well. And then in kind of comparison, like some people from my running group, they were recently talking about how they've been trying to find a new car and like the kind of what they're going through and all of that. And so, I mean, in that situation, just, I would probably kind of stay quiet. I don't want people to like, not feel like they can't talk about like their car buying experience around me, but it is like really awkward because I just kind of sit there. I don't say anything in that situation. But I mean, there's other things like when people will say something like, oh my gosh, like I can't even see that or something like that. And I'm like, oh my God, me either. Like, that's great. I was running this morning and one of the girls said, she's like, I have something in my eye. And I'm like, oh God, like, do we need to stop? Cause we need them. And she was like, oh my God, I'm sorry. And it wasn't like out of context. Like a lot of people, I just try to like give them the intention that they're not trying to be rude, but like, I do try to call attention that like, I mean, they should maybe be a little conscious of what they're saying and, of that, but I don't know. Annie, you had some really good perspective from this. Break it down for us.
No, I mean, I think a lot of it is dependent on the situation. I mean, there are certainly instances where I've done similar things to how you described, and a buddy of mine will say something and I'll be like, oh, sounds tough. And like, it's a quick comment. I think getting on my soapbox ever is inappropriate in those cases, because realistically, if it's someone who I think I should respond to, it's someone who I know doesn't mean any ill will with it. And if it's someone who does mean ill will with it, normally they're probably not worth the time. More often than not, I'm in situations where there may be a crowd. And I'll give an example of something that happened very recently. I think I was in a meeting yesterday when a lot of us are returning to the office. A lot of us are going back, and things are still very hybrid. We're back in a meeting room where we're looking at screens, and there are several people on a screen, but several of us are in the room now too. And I have a coworker who is talking about how it's weird with her using her glasses again, because she needs them to be able to see the person on the screen, but she doesn't need to see her laptop. So she keeps going back and forth from using them and not using them. And man, this is weird. And I see that as, okay, we're all just trying to relate about how it's weird to come back to the office. There are 8 people in this room. If I'm close to all of them, sure, maybe I say something. These people, most of whom know I'm legally blind, maybe some of them already feel it's awkward because something like that's been said in front of me. I don't feel I'm benefiting anyone if I go ahead and put this person, quote unquote, in their place in front of these other people. And if anything, I'm just making myself look like a jerk. I don't say anything there. Like, could I maybe say something to that person afterwards if I really think that they were trying to do something malicious? Sure. But in that exact situation, I know that person's just trying to relate and be like, ah, we're going back to the office is crazy, isn't it? And me saying something does nothing but say, is like, hey, you better not say anything. And I don't say anything in that case. But there's certainly instances where I do. I love to make a joke where I can and where I think a joke can be educational and help people recognize privilege. I think that's the best kind of joke there is. There are lots of nuance. And I think smaller situations are better, and situations where you know someone really well is better. I also think it's best where you can do it in such a situation where if that person did feel put in their place, they have the option to then ask you a question and have a dialogue around it. Although I'm not necessarily requiring that when I say whatever I say. I know that's like a really long-winded answer, Jessica, but that's how I feel I think about it.
No, I think you made so much sense and kind of pulled it together in the sense for us that like, it is situational. Like you have to take that context of like, what am I trying to get out of this at this moment? Like, is it like a joke where I'm like, hey, like that was kind of rude. Like, and I'll make a joke out of it. Or be like, you know, that was kind of rude of whatever that person maybe said, but then also in the context of like in a work environment, but other people around. Yeah. And so, like in comparison to like when everybody at my run club was talking about getting new cars and different things like that. Like, yeah, I keep quiet because I'm like, what could have been the alternative? I mean to say like, wow, really must be nice because none of you have picked me up. Like, you know, like, and then I'm like, okay, well, now I'm the jerk, you know? So like, I try to, it's a good point to like reference that.
Yeah. No, I mean, first of all, I really miss negotiating car prices with car dealers. So that's probably something I will hopefully do with someone again someday. But beyond that, like, I think one thing, not that anyone in this call needs permission from Jessica or myself on anything, but to the degree that we have any respect at all, the only thing I would say is you are not a pushover if you don't say something in that situation, and you are not a jerk if you decide to say something in that situation. All of these are unique situations. I wouldn't want anyone here. I know some people often feel like, damn, I really should have stood up for myself, and like, I should have done something for the blind community, and like, I'm just letting people walk all over me. That's not true. Like, there are instances where you shouldn't say something, in my opinion, I'll say. And then there are instances where I think it's great too, but whatever you do naturally or whatever's comfortable for you, I think is fine in those situations. You're not a better or worse because your comfort level allows you to or encourages you to say those things or not say those things. And that's my perspective. There are instances where people ask us questions on these calls where I feel very strongly there's a right thing to do and a wrong thing to do. This is not one of those.
Yeah, I'll totally plus one all of that that you said, Andy. But one of the questions, just as kind of a follow-up, was when someone is in like that sort of situation, does anyone like, and this is definitely open to you, Andy, and people on the call, like, does anyone kind of have like a go-to line that kind of like is a little bit more neutral or something that seems a little bit more helpful for the people in context for them to be like, oh, sort of thing, but also in the kind of a go-to line that just kind of makes it like, if that person does feel like they should acknowledge, like some sort of line that kind of makes that context of that conversation easy. So it's more neutral, I would say, like in the sense of doesn't come across too harsh, but doesn't ignore it. But that's just kind of a question for us to throw out there.
Can you give me an example of the situation you're talking about, Jess?
Not off the top of my head.
Is this an example where you're in a group and everyone knows about your vision or some people don't and you want to tell someone? Well, what's the – maybe I'm the only person on the call who didn't understand.
I guess I'm just trying to think like – I don't I'm trying to think of something that like we as like blind, visually impaired people get a lot like – this is a great example. Like you're at the grocery store and you're checking out and you have your cane with you and they're like, do you want help with help to your car? I'm like, nope, they don't let me drive, but thanks so much. And then I had like walk away with my cane. But that's always kind of like my fun line, like, or even if I'm at Target and people are like, oh, do you want help to your car? I'm like, nope. So crazy. They don't let blind people drive too often. And I'm like, I laugh and they kind of laugh. So that's kind of like my go-to line that it's not like rude, but it's kind of funny, but it's also like, you have to acknowledge them in that context. I couldn't just be like, no, like, are you kidding me? Like, I don't even get, like, you know, like, I, that's not like the time and place for me to like have that education, but it's like my go-to line. Like, but yeah.
Like a go-to blind dad joke-esque thing is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Or something that just kind of like adds life, but something that also kind of, I mean, that person, I don't want that person to feel bad, you know? But also,
yeah, I'm
like,
hearing the same kind of thing where it's like, do you have a thing you say when you're working at a movie theater and you're tearing tickets and you say, have a great movie, and they say, you too. Like, do you have a way to respond when the other person said something awkward, kind of has their foot in their mouth because you're blind? And like, and we all have these instances. I mean, you said, you gave one great example of when someone asked if you need a ride to your car, but there are other times where people say things that they think are inappropriate, where they'd be like, oh my gosh, did you see this over the weekend, Andy, or blah, blah, blah. Did you? And like, of course, that's very common nomenclature. And I'm going to answer that question the exact same way anyone else would. But you can tell someone's like, oh shit, I just messed up. Excuse me for cursing. I apologize. But like, I think it's good in that moment, regardless of the words that come out, Jess, I think it's good to break that ice quickly in a way that you're like, hey, like, I forgive you. But like, don't use the words "I forgive you" because that's way weird. My opinion, by all means, say whatever you'd like. But I like your approach where it, like, smile with whatever you say, and it can be anything as simple as, "Oh no, you're good, all good."
Yeah,
or
totally.
You can make a joke, very like a specific joke to the situation, like what you do in the car situation. I think throw yourself, I mean, and not that you have to do this, like, I think it's appropriate to in some way be a little self-deprecating in the way that you are as well. Like, oh, like, whatever this is, make the joke about you instead of them, unless you think something was done maliciously, because more often than not, a lot of these folks are saying something that they have a habit of saying, and then they feel really weird because they said it to a blind person. And
hey guys, it's
we
Megan.
Don't want that. Yeah, go for it, Meg.
I think I'm putting like two and two together here. But what if you like get in the situation where it's like you don't want to make a joke, like, and it's really hard for you to make a joke, and you have that pit in your stomach, you know what I mean? And like what's a good,
like, it's as awkward for you as it is for them, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Are you talking about someone accidentally having said something, or something where you feel it's an education opportunity?
Both. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And
yeah, I mean,
I think that's, oh, go ahead, Emmy. Yeah. Take it.
Megan, was there any more to that? I know I cut you off with your question.
No. I mean, I love bringing brevity to like the situations where you're just like, oh shoot, like this is awkward for both of us. But what if it's just to the point of where you're just like, I'm tired of joking about this. You know what I mean? Like, is there any, I think,
is there
like
any appropriate way to kind of raise the issue?
Yeah. I think that's the point that like the topic was getting to. I think I don't know.
Yeah. And there are instances, and I can't speak to very specific instances, but if anyone on the call has a very specific instance, I'm happy to give you my advice on that. I'll give you an example for me though. So there was a person in my life who I know was pretty kind spirited in using this phrase, but very often this person, when spending time with me, I feel like they wanted to recognize my disability in a way that I was just like kind of bothered by. So they, every time they wanted to describe something that was like visual to me, which I appreciated, they would preface it with, Andy, I know you can't see this, so, and then they'd say whatever. And I'm just was like, kind of like, that's, I don't like the way you're setting this up every time. And I think it's appropriate in those moments, one-on-one, to say whatever that is, especially if it's one-on-one. If it's not one-on-one, I think it's fair to let your face respond any way your face naturally would respond, even if it's kind of disgust and you don't want to say anything and just swallow. I think it's appropriate to say, hey, like, that's not really cool, I don't love that. Or say, hey, like, I think that's nice to say. Or, and sometimes I've found this appropriate, and maybe this is my coping mechanism. Sometimes I recognize that disability is a spectrum and that there's 17 dimensions to it. And the same thing is true of blindness. So sometimes I find it easier for me to tell someone in that instance who's done something that's kind of insensitive to remove myself from the situation and act as if I don't really care, even if I do, and say something like, hey, like, I know some blind people who'd be really bothered by you saying that. And like, basically removing my situation so I don't feel like I'm having to like be, whether it's seen as a jerk or blah, blah. I'm really a coach in that situation and saying, hey, like, some people would be really bothered by the language you just used or by the phrase you just said or by the way you characterize that. And that way, I'm not saying you're throwing other people under the bus, but it really does, for me, it makes me feel more comfortable saying it sometimes. I know I had a few different ideas there. I don't know if any of them ring out or ring, it kind of hit home with anyone here, but those are situations I've been in before.
Andy, this is Jessica from Georgia. And I totally like get what you're saying, because this happens to us commonly. Like, it happens quite often. And I agree where it 95% of the time, it's not malicious. But, and then people afterwards, they're like, oops, you know, I shouldn't have said that. And I recently, a while back, had an uncomfortable situation happen where some higher ups from my job came into my office. And of course, I have a very big screen that I use. And the lady was like, oh, wow, that's a really big screen, like, kind of like that. And I just like said, yeah, it is, because, you know, it was uncomfortable for me. And I feel like sometimes, which is weird, right? I feel like if I'm like, yeah, it is big because I'm blind, then people, I make them feel bad for saying that. So then it's just awkward. So afterwards, yes. my coworker went to this individual and was like, hey, you know, she's visually impaired. And she came back into my office and she's like, I am so sorry. And now every time she sees me, she feels like she has to apologize. And I'm like, it's fine. It's fine. You know, I'm blind. I'm okay with it. And if you ever have questions about it, I'll be happy to talk to you about it. But it was like, I didn't even know like what to say, because I felt like I would make her feel bad for calling her out. It's uncomfortable sometimes.
Oh, totally. Okay. I know exactly what you're talking about. And I've been in that exact same instance and done exactly. I mean, I was in that instance this week when we basically, after COVID, now have to like order our lunch from work at the very beginning of the day. And then you have to come grab your lunch out of these boxes. And I use a magnifier sometimes to read all of the numbers off of the cartons. And someone trying to be friendly next to me says, oh, I see you scouting what everyone else ordered to get recommendations for what you want to order tomorrow. And other people around me recognize what's happening. They know the situation. They know who I am. And I know some of them feel it's awkward. And I did exactly what you did, which is, I'm not going to say anything right now, like, because it's weird and awkward. And maybe that person will eventually be told something, and maybe they won't. But for now, I feel better not saying anything.
So but, I had a situation.
But that's exactly right, Jessica. Thank you.
Yeah, no, for sure.
No, and I appreciate that, because I feel like I'm never malicious about it unless it's like an ill intent. Like, unless someone's being aggressive towards me or I can tell it's not a, you know, not a mistake. And then even in that case, I'll just be like, you know, I am visually impaired, and kind of correct the situation that way.
Right. Totally agree with you there.
Yeah. Hi, it's Bo. I just had sort of two little thoughts on it too, which is that two kind of rules of thumb I try to do is, because I think a lot of us sometimes use humor for a variety of aspects of life nowadays. And there's a lot of funny things that do happen to us, you know, when you have vision loss. But I think especially in those scenarios where you're like, really are feeling kind of slighted on purpose or accident or feeling uncomfortable by it, is I really try in those situations not to at least like use humor that it all makes you the butt of the joke, you know, even if you might do that at other times, because it just sort of feel like then it sticks with you a little longer. And sort of similarly, like sometimes when they might apologize afterwards or things like that, you know, I try not to like rush to brushing over the incident and being like, oh, it's okay right away. If you're like, no, I actually don't feel that, you know, as I try to like, at least be honest with yourself and sort of receive, say, thank you, if they're apologizing or something like that. But like sometimes in other situations when someone apologizes for something else, I might like just be meek and say it's okay or something, you know? And so I kind of try to actually not sort of wipe the problem away completely, you know?
Yeah. And it's kind of sit with not say it's okay, or I don't mean not accept an apology, but don't lay down yourself so as to make other people feel more comfortable while you are sitting in your own discomfort. I don't mean to say that's what you're saying, but that's the way I took it, and definitely agree with that.
Exactly. Definitely do accept the apology, especially if it gets all the way to there, but not like, you know, the moment they start saying like, oh, maybe I said something a little off, don't sort of immediately say, oh no, it's okay. You know, kind of.
Yeah. I think sometimes, and I'm not saying anyone would actually do this with their words, but it's human nature sometimes to feel like, oh, now I made you uncomfortable because I'm blind and I should apologize. And like, not that anyone actually gets that way, but I know it's almost human nature to feel like, oh, okay, I now made this situation weird. And that's what I think we all need to not avoid, but like respect ourselves in those moments.
Yeah, that's
everything you said there, Bo.
I had a situation where I had someone new within my workplace, and she was super new to accessibility and just kind of the accessibility space. And she said something, and she called people with disabilities impaired users. And I was enraged. Like, I was just so offended. I was so mad. And I feel like it takes a lot for me to get offended. And I'm a fairly nice person. But when she said impaired users, I was so quickly offended. My face probably went like 50 shades of red. And I felt my like heart beating out of my chest for like every person with a disability to be called an impaired user. Like, that felt so disrespectful. And I like took a deep breath and said, what you're telling me right now is very offensive. I don't think that you should have this context, and like, you should be very careful with the language that you use. And you should definitely be more informed with what you say. And I can help you with that. And I'm happy to kind of walk you through things, proper etiquette and language to be using, especially in the workplace, but also just for your knowledge, impaired users is not one of them. And she also said, she said something else, and now I'm forgetting in like mid-sentence what else it was. But yeah, that was like the one time in the most recent that I literally stopped, took a deep breath, and told her I was very offended by that comment. And it was very straightforward. It was very honest. And I think, Meg, that's kind of like the context you were kind of getting at, is it was the pit of my stomach. And I was so mad. Like, I don't want to be called impaired user like that. Like, that's nothing to define us. And it was a very honest, like, that's not language you should use with anybody. And
Jessica, yeah. Sliss, how did she receive it?
She, it was like, oh, okay. And that was really it. I did mention it to another person at work and said, like, I'd really like to work on language with her, especially if she's going to be in the accessibility space. And people quickly just was like, oh, I'm so sorry. And they apologized for her. And I'm like, I'm not looking for an apology, nor am I offended. But before she goes any farther, we really need to make sure that there is better language, because of that's just disrespectful. And so, yeah, I think it was a quick acknowledgement.
Jessica, that's like a great example. I mean, I've been telling my best friend about like some of these stories that I've come across, and I tell her that I just freeze when stuff like this happens. And she recently said to me, a deer in headlights gets hit. And I was like, oh my goodness, that is the best phrase I've ever heard. Because it's not, you know, you don't get hit, but you get hit emotionally, because you do freeze and you don't get to say your words. You know, you get to dwell in it emotionally for hours or days or whatever. So that's perfect, Jessica. Thank you.
And yeah, Jessica, for sure. It's Bo again. Sorry to jump back in.
No,
what you just said reminded me of, like, literally, I think it was earlier this week or last week, someone in sort of in accommodations realm at the place I'll be working also referred to it as my workplace restrictions instead of accommodations. And it was sort of very much the same. And I think those are quite the same, where it's like, unless you sort of aren't up to the task at the moment, which is okay, it's always good to know what you're ready for. But I think that is definitely, those were both ones where it's good to kind of do a pause and call it out kind of right away, which is also what I did. But
yeah, I think all of that's exactly right. And I think, I mean, you alluded to it just now, Bo, but I think this, just recognizing we have others on the call, I don't want anyone here to feel like you have done something wrong, because I know I have. And you kind of alluded to this as well. I forget who said it, Deer in Headlights comment, but like, I don't want anyone to feel like, oh, if you didn't say something in those moments and you do go back home, you haven't done something wrong. It is, I mean, as sad as it is, you will be in that situation again. And if you want to address it differently, that's great. And we want to support you in that as well. And I'm not saying we as any special body here. I personally think that that's addressed differently with different people. I love to call people out, and I think it's appropriate in a lot of those situations. I think in those work situations, it's especially almost important to be doing it for yourself and for others. And at the same time, there are other times where maybe for your own safety or your discomfort or anxiety around the situation you're in, maybe you won't. And doing it a case-by-case basis is a fine thing to do as well. And by all means, anyone here is welcome to disagree with me.
Hey, it's Maria. I'll go really quick, Chris. I also think it depends on your stage of diagnosis. I know the first year, anything anybody said to me, I like broke down in tears. Year 2, 3, 4, 5, I'm 9.5 years, nothing really gets to me anymore. And I have no problem standing up and educating a person who may say something way out of line, be it a stranger, again, safety, situational and all that. I do take that in consideration, but, or somebody who doesn't know me that well, or doesn't know much about blind people. People just don't know what they don't know. And I've had people say straight to my face, how can you babysit your grandchild? You're blind. What are you going to do in an emergency? I go, what everyone else does, dial 911. How are you going to do that? They just don't know what they don't know. I didn't take offense to it, because instead I chose to educate instead of get irate. Yeah, I wrote about it. And I think it also does stem to the stage of your journey, if you will, of being affected. I really believe that, like Wayne, who's been affected for over 40 years, probably handles it a lot differently than someone who's been affected for 2 years. And I do the jokes, but I also will have that small little heart to heart with someone who's probably more than an acquaintance and just say, you know, it really makes me feel bad when you joke that I can't read a menu every time we go out. You know, it makes me, after a while, I'll just have that heart to heart, and they don't know they're making me feel bad until you say something to them. And then after that, it was like, I am so sorry. And I'm like, no, it's fine. I should have spoke up sooner. But no, you let yourself be, you know, uncomfortable for other people's comfortability. People are already uncomfortable around blind people. Let's just say that. So I think it's not our job to make them comfortable, but it's our job to make it comfortable for ourselves. So I think speaking up, it may be hard, you may be shaking, you may have the pit in the bottom of your stomach, but in the long run, you're helping to educate for the next blind person they run into. And you're kind of paving the way to help them be a little bit more aware of the next blind person they run into. So you're kind of paying it forward for the next person. So, and then if I could have a minute to talk conference at some point, I'd love to. Thank you. That's all I'll say.
Maria, we'll certainly save 5 minutes, and we'll probably get there sooner rather than later too. So thanks for being here. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. I know I heard someone else talking.
It's Chris. So I think 11 months on Marie. I'm coming up to my 11th year here. So she kind of took the words out of my mouth. But after all this time, I agree with what Maria said. And some of that just slides off my back now. But in kind of a segue to what you're talking about, I've decided to not let it bother me, but it's time to educate people. So if something's said, or I'm on my high horse now to tell people about my white cane, and because I've just had too many encounters that they don't know what this means. So I asked somebody, they don't know what the white cane, do you know what the white cane stands for? No, I don't. Okay, now it's time to educate them, because it's just too important that they don't, if they don't understand what this means. So I politely, kindly, in the nicest sort of way, explain what the white cane represents. This is my mission. So you see someone with a white cane, do they need help crossing the street? Can you open the door for them? Are they lost? You need to ask this person if they need help. And this is what I do now. I'm so tired of them not knowing what the white cane represents. This is my mission. And I cannot comprehend that people, young and old, do not know what this white cane represents. And I'm determined to educate them. So I think that's an important thing. And they need to stop and ask a person that they can see the person with the white cane. The person with the white cane can't see them, but they need to know what it is. I'm done.
I agree with you. I can't imagine nobody knowing what a white cane is.
But I've encountered that, Wayne, so many times. It's just, it just blows my mind. You've all heard my story about, why are you carrying a white ski pole on such a hot day?
Yeah.
That was the icing on the cake. Yeah, my white ski pole on such a hot July day. I said, okay, you don't know what this is. Okay, that did it for me. So.
Right. No, thanks for sharing, Chris.
What did they? I'm sorry,
I think we
Chris,
should just, if you encounter that, tell them what it represents.
What did they think
Pardon
it was?
Me?
I'm sorry. What did they think your cane was?
A white ski pole on such, why are you walking around with a white ski pole on such a hot day?
Oh.
Right.
This is Lissa. My hypothesis is that this community encounters this problem more than many in the blind community, because I think that the LH1 community is such a active group, people that generally speaking were affected, teens and 20s and around then and all ages, but there's just a lot of people that are out and about living life, you know, not multi issues, but just blindness. And I believe that this group is a lightning rod for having to educate, because I think there's a lot of other individuals who are blind, who aren't out and about mainstreamed into standard life as much. And I just think that contributes to the fact that this group does take on this educational role when ready. And I think it's a public service to everyone with a vision impairment. And I why it's this group's cross to bear that we have to do it, I don't know, but I do think it's my perception. It's my guess.
I don't think it's this group. I think people who are blind and more blind, they're out and about just as much as this group is. I think this group, maybe in many cases, people have more vision, so they notice things more. But the people I've met who are totally blind are just as active as this group.
It's funny, Lissa, that you say that, because when I was skiing most recently, I kept my blind skier bib on even when I wasn't on the mountain. If I was just on the base with my cane, because I thought, oh my gosh, my cane looks like a ski pole. Like, nobody's going to know. And I was really maneuvering myself alone for a lot of the time. So very funny, because if you were out, you know, just walking around in a city or a town, you wouldn't put a blind pedestrian bib on. But I don't know how else to put that. That's funny.
You know, one of the things about LHON vision and a lot of other vision loss, we don't look blind. Sorry, this is Maria. We don't look blind. And I think that that does come into play, is people don't think of us. They look at us as friends, family, and they forget that we're blind a lot of the times. And that's when I think a lot of the random car conversations, or the gas, or, oh, I didn't have my car all day today. They don't remember that we're blind.
Absolutely.
Right. Yes. Okay. And so when I'm around my friends, they forget I'm walking in front of them, and I'm like, whoa, 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 blind girl's leading. What's going on? And they're like, we forget. They absolutely forget. And I sometimes, you know, where it gets, I have to remind them, hey, can you tell me what's on the table? Because, and I think it's, is it a compliment that they've forgotten because I handle myself so well, but it can be also a hindrance because they may forget to tell me what's on the table or what's in front of me, things like that. And I need to ask, but again, that's being an advocate. I recently was in the hospital, quick stay, and I was educating people left and right, because unless you looked at my chart, you did not know I was blind. And I had to explain it so many times, but it led to great conversations about LHON, blindness, mitochondrial disease, and all of that. You're doing it every day, every day, whether you really know it or not, in conversation, just by being you and living with LHON.
There's so many people I'm riding bikes with every day, and some understand, others act, I think they act like they understand, but they don't understand, you know. And we went out tonight to a restaurant for a birthday party, and, you know, like you said, I can't see something right in front of me. You know, what is this? Is there a dip, you know? And it's just, some get it better than others.
I agree completely. And with what Lissa and Maria were kind of saying about looking blind, and maybe how LHON were a little different. And I have to agree with that just a little bit, because some of us use canes and some of us don't. And I feel like that's usually rare with blindness. Me personally, I only use a cane when I'm going somewhere new or that's really populated. So I feel like the white cane definitely helps to let people know if they know what it is. But some of us don't use it. And that can be when those awkward situations and those comments come about, like Maria said, because people forget. That happens to me all the time. I'm like, wait, slow down. I can't see, or what's that? And they're like, oh yeah, I forgot.
I have a question for Alyssa.
Go for it, Wayne.
I'm here.
Okay. Will you be putting out a LHON conference 2023 Facebook page like in previous years?
The page has been created, and Maria, who leads the conference, will know more about when she'll be at collaborating with her team to add people to it. Won't you, Maria?
Yes, I will. Yes, Maria? We have created the group. And we're just starting to get big chunks of people registering. And so we're going to be able to add people or invite people to the group. Thanks for asking, Wayne.
Maria, now's probably a great time for us to go ahead, since we're approaching the top of the hour anyway, and I want folks, if they need to leave, to be able to be here before we turn the recording off. If you don't mind just taking a couple minutes and giving us updates on the conference and the progress and any news since last month.
Yeah. All right. So the conference, just the basic information, this year is in Charlotte, North Carolina at the Charlotte Sheraton Le Meridien Hotel. It is going to be June 29th, 30th, and July 1st. So that's a Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Things kick off Thursday afternoon, mid-afternoon, and they will end Saturday around 4 o'clock. We have Friday and Saturday are full days of sessions. We have a banquet Friday night. Registration, big news on registration. The early bird discounted fee ends May 31st. So if you haven't registered, you gotta wanna get that on your calendar to get registered. We have a huge group already, lots of big chunks coming in. But it's more the merrier for sure. But you wanna get that early bird rate. It's $115 until May 31st. And that includes all 3 days, all sessions, breakfast, lunches on Friday and Saturday, the banquet ticket for Friday night, and all the sessions, and plus the Thursday events, which is a kickoff and a mixer, kind of a gathering that evening. So it's a great deal, but the price is gonna go up after May 31st. You also wanna get your hotel booked. There's a group rate, and most folks are coming Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. Why Saturday, when the conference ends on Saturday? Because along with being able to network and connect with people all the days that we're there during breaks and before, you know, during banquet, things like that, it is really fun to kind of decompress and just hang out with new and old LHON friends on Saturday after the conference. So most folks normally fly out on Sunday, but if you have to leave Saturday, you have to leave. We'll miss, you know, we want you to stay if you can, but the group rate is good for all 3 nights. And let's see. So hotel and registration, and we do have a Facebook group that we have created, and we'll be adding and inviting folks who have registered. So it's a private group for just people attending, and we are working hard on our agenda, and we have a lot of the themes that we've done in past conferences, and you can view videos from past conferences, and you can find the links to registration, hotel, and past conference videos all on LHON.org under the conference tab. All right. So get registered, get that hotel. Like Chris said, she has her hotel, and you know, because you can always cancel the hotel if you don't attend. But we're really starting to rev it up. We've got a great program coming along for you guys, and we're super excited to see everyone so many more people in person again this year. So any questions at all, I am going to be putting out another post this week about registration deadline coming up as far as the early bird rate. And please, if you have any questions or, you know, anything you need to know, just tag me in a comment, and I'm happy to kind of get over there to answer it. But it helps to be tagged, so I know you've actually, you know, you have a question or something. So there's my 4-minute spiel.
Perfect. Awesome. Thank you, Maria. Thank you. Since you mentioned other things coming up by the end of May, I figured now is a great time, Jess, if we want to go ahead and highlight the other great calls for those of you who don't know already. LHON Live, we mentioned, launched back in August of 2014, but since then, I think over a dozen other LHON related niche affinity groups have started their own calls. These are regional calls or other basically groups based on specific questions or needs have arisen. And many of those have calls every month. Jess, I'm stalling a little bit if you want to get that list in front of
that
you.
Was I also have it in front amount. Of me
if you want me to. So go for it. It's all yours.
Yep. No, ready. Thank you for the stall. I definitely needed it. Next up, which is going to be tomorrow, May 4th, we have Navigating Education. Great call. That call happens about 3 times a year, so definitely jump in. Next call is Monday, May 6th, and that is the Mid-Atlantic
call. Next is Wednesday, May 10th. That's Navigating Employment with LHON. On Wednesday, May 17th, it's Moms of LHON Affected, and that's Moms of Kids of All Ages. On Thursday, May 18th, there is the Pacific Northwest call. On Saturday, May 20th, it's the LHON Plus call. Wednesday, May 31st, it is LHON Sisterhood. Please join. And that is the calls for the month.
Just so everyone knows, the information for all of those calls is in the email that Lissa sends out. It will actually come from LHON.org. And all of those calls use the same call-in link, phone number, everything as this call. They may differ on time, though, so make sure you check that email or reach out to someone if you would like more details there, or if you even want to get involved in the planning of those calls or kick off one of your own.
Hey, Andy.
Yes, go for it.
It's Megan. I just haven't received the emails in a couple months, and I didn't know if it was me or if they weren't going out.
It's Liz. They've been going out. I will check and see if I can figure out the why, and we'll close that loop.
Okay. And it might be on my end. It might be going to some other inbox, but
yeah.
Awesome.
If you want to look for it specifically, Megan, the last email went out on Friday. If you want to check some folder and see if you had it.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
And one real quick thing. I just want to make sure the Mid-Atlantic date, Jessica, I'm not sure if I heard you right, but I just want to make sure that anyone who is in that Virginia, DC area, that one is on Monday, May 8th. And I thought I might have heard something else, so just double checking there.
I think I heard the 6th as well, so thank you for clearing that up.
Yes, thank you.
Well, with that, I want to, since we're at the top of the hour, and we spent a lot of time on that one topic, but I want to go ahead and get the recording off in case folks have questions they'd like to ask outside of the recording. As always, you can ask anything and bring anything you want to the recorded portion or the second portion of these calls whenever you want. And it's also a great time to introduce yourself. That said, before I turn off the recording, I want to remind you all that we will have our next LHON live call the first Wednesday of, oh my gosh, my calendar app has gone way back. The first Wednesday of June, which in this case will be the 7th. So June 7th, 6-7, if that makes it easy to remember for yourself, will be the next LHON live call. Again, always 8 p.m. Eastern here in the U.S., 5 p.m. Pacific. Same login information, same everything. As always, if there's specific things you want us to talk about, you can bring those to our attention before then or bring them to the top of the call, and we'll make sure we have time for it. With that, I'm going to go ahead and get the recording off. Hang around, and we'll keep the conversation going.